Welcome back to URN and the film show, and hey, happy Halloween, guys.
Happy Halloween.
How did we spend it?
Oh, how did I spend... I'm not sure. What day was Halloween?
Tuesday, mate.
I've no idea.
Memorable. Did you do anything, Ben?
Well, I sold my Halloween ticket for Ocean and basically stayed in and watched Vampire Diaries, so...
Fair enough, that's
really
kind
spooky.
Of Halloween-esque. Mm-hmm. I watched a horror film by Ingmar Bergman, who got 23% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I completely see now why it did. So yeah, very uneventful from the three of us. We hope you guys had better Halloweens than we did. So yeah, this is me just trying to awkwardly move us into our classic film that we've kind of decided to do this week. And following on with our Halloween theme, this one was suggested by Ben. So do you want to take away, introduce what we're going to be doing?
Sure. Okay, so for this week's kind of Halloween classic, we're doing The Shining, mainly because it's the only proper horror film I've actually seen. I'm not a big fan of horror, but, you know, I agreed to come on, you know, because Francis begged me and bribed me, so, you know, what could I say?
Otherwise, it's me talking about Tarkovsky for an hour, and no one wants that.
Don't put yourself down.
What?
The Shining is basically about a man and his family, so his wife and kid, move into a hotel for the winter months, just look after it, so they become like the caretaker. They get snowed in, and during this time, the husband, played by Jack Nicholson, yep. He's a screenwriter and he's working on his script, and during the kind of month that they're at the hotel, he starts going a bit insane, and we don't really know if he's going mentally, you know, insane, or if there's a supernatural force at work in the hotel, and things all come to a head in the final act where he goes proper, you know, bananas and starts trying to kill everyone with axes and stuff.
That does sound proper bananas.
It is proper bananas. I love that I use that phrase.
I think that's a pretty good summary of the film, really. It's kind of this descent in just a psychological anarchy where we're just watching it thinking, is he crazy or is the hotel haunted? And I think that question is actually what kind of made it actually specifically say on the advertisement for the film, this is a Stanley Kubrick film, because I think the Stephen King novel did sort of differ in that it maybe deals with a different sort of aspect of the horror. And I think what there's a trend in all of Kubrick's films that you can see, which is sort of looking at sort of the human mind and sort of, but at the same time from a very sort of distanced way. Like, people say that he kind of puts his framing of his films first and then his actors second, and I think people feel like with 2001 there's kind of a distance between the characters. You don't really feel very much of a connection, even though you can very much see like how events are unfolding for the character. So I think it's really interesting how he deals with it. So first of all, go on, give us some context. How old were you when you first saw this film?
How old was I?
Yeah.
Well, considering it was just last year, I was 18.
Okay. So I feel like it might have an influence on you. I was 14 when I first saw it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I found it deeply unsettling. Not for any other reason than, you know, it wasn't gory, it wasn't this, that, or the other, except for one scene that used, like, quite a lot of blood.
Oh yeah.
Do you know the one I'm thinking of?
Quite is a bit of an understatement.
Is
there,
it the,
I reckon.
Lift scene, or yet another quite a lot of blood scene?
It certainly frames lifts. It involves corridors, like a lot of the film does.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Where basically there's just a sort of, well, to put it mildly, a tsunami of blood.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah.
And it's not anything that you're going to wince at, but it's certainly one that just makes you feel just uncomfortable just throughout.
Gave me chills, yeah.
I still get those chills whenever I watch it.
And I think part of the reason why this film kind of scared me and had such a profound effect on me was that it was although it was partly supernatural, it was shrouded and wrapped in reality. Like most horror films nowadays, like Paranormal Activity and everything, they all have kind of ghosts or kind of monsters hiding under the bed. And whilst they're scary in their own right, you know that they're not real because, you know, this is the real world. But the fact you couldn't actually place your finger on the supernatural elements in this film kind of made you feel that this could happen to anyone if you were left on your own in a house or a building or a school for, you know, a while. You could start to feel like you're going to develop cabin fever and go, all, you know, here's Johnny.
Yeah. I know we're currently just like embedded in a time where if you explain a plot synopsis, you're giving away a spoiler. But I feel like in order to talk about The Shining, we do kind of need to reveal a bit of how this sort of narrative unfolds. And I think one thing for me that's very interesting is the way that it does play with this idea of is it haunted? Is it all in their mind? And I think one of the things that springs to my mind is with room 237.
Mm.
Because the dad and the son see the same thing. it's certainly scary to say the least. So what did you make of that whole sequence of the film?
Oh, well, I was just like, when the kid came back into the room with bruises on his neck, I was actually kind of creeped out. And like the wife, I did think that originally Jack Nicholson's character had done it. And just to give some context to that assumption, it is revealed very early on in the film that the father was an alcoholic and did dislocate his son's shoulder whilst in a drunken rage. So you do kind of get that kind of atmosphere of, is he reverting back to his ways, or is he just kind of, you know, becoming under the spell of the hotel? But when I saw what was in the bathtub in room 237, I was like, oh god, like, I wasn't expecting that. Like,
well, it was all right at the start.
Yeah, but then it got really creepy. Like, it was
0 to 100. Well, I know you've seen a documentary rather than the film, but do you know what we're...
Oh, yeah. Because the first time I saw this film was when I was 15, getting ready to go to a fancy dress party with a friend. We were like, oh, yeah, we'll watch this. Because we're, you know, macho and bravado. And the scene that creeps me out was that one. Probably because of a good Catholic education. It was very unsettling. And that is what sticks in my mind when I think of The Shining.
Yeah. It's for me that it's either that or the final note again that it finishes on. I mean, if you've seen the film, you know what we're talking about. And if you haven't, you can only imagine. But who isn't going to just be absolutely terrified by what's just standing in front of them?
Yeah, I'm pretty uncomfortable thinking about it.
Yeah, it's 0 to 100 pretty quickly.
May I say one pro of the film that I really enjoy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is because of that documentary, Room 237, which is what I've seen most recently regarding The Shining, it looks at all the several conspiracy theories about the film. And we all know that Stanley Kubrick was an incredibly intricate director in how he framed shots and what he placed inside them. So the corridors, the mapping of the hotel doesn't make sense. It can't physically exist. Architects have like worked it out and it doesn't work.
That's incredible.
And there are lots of there's this recurring brand of tin of like baked beans or something in the film, which has a Native American's face on the top, and there are these undertones of is it a Native American burial ground?
Yeah, it's the hotel itself, the Overlook Hotel, was built on, as you say, a Native American burial ground. So I mean, there's cause to believe that it could be haunted. But
it's just to watch it. I'd say watch The Shining, watch the documentary Room 237, and then rewatch The Shining. You have so much more respect, even if you didn't enjoy it the first time round, just for the craft that went into it, and the thought and energy. It's something to behold. There's something else. Oh yeah, the moon landing thing, which I really enjoyed, because you go through, you watch this documentary like, this is all nonsense, and then you get to the point where like, oh, they say Stanley Kubrick directed the moon landing, and this is proof, because the sun is wearing a knitted jumper which has the Apollo 11 shuttle setting off. I think someone that precise would not put it in for... It starts to make you so aware of it all.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, the fact that this guy only made, what was it, how many did he make? Was it 8 or 9 sort of massive films? I know he made a few
something like that.
But yeah, the attention to detail that went into all of them is just absolutely staggering. And I think in the case of The Shining, this was 5 years after he made Barry Lyndon, so he's certainly thinking about what he was going to make and then actually making it for a very, very long time. And yeah, I think his overall treatment of the film is just, yeah, it still gives me chills. It still gives me a weird feeling every time I watch it. I've seen it 3 or 4 times, so it still holds up as just being a horribly scary experience.
Yeah.
I think some credit though, like, I mean, we've been talking about Kubrick a lot and with good reason, because he was an amazing director, but I think, you know, some credit should go to the actors, especially Jack Nicholson, because, you know, it's just his facial expressions, like when he goes properly bananas, like his face just sells everything. Like, he doesn't stop smiling and it's just an evil grin. It's over exaggerated. Yeah. And he's just, and that scene where he's swinging, where he's walking up the stairs towards his wife Wendy and she's swinging the axe constantly at him, apparently they did that scene so many times that the actress playing Wendy had a bit of a, like, a mental breakdown or something. Like,
Was this the bit in the bathroom or the bit with the baseball bat on the stairs?
The bit with the baseball bat on the stairs.
Yeah.
And they filmed it so many times to get it right that she was actually getting really freaked out, because she, you know, you can picture it really in your head, you know, she kept on getting advanced on by this man, like, you know, lots and lots of times, again and again and again. So, you know, they really kind of put their time and effort into it, you know, at the cost of their cast and crew.
He bullied her.
Yeah, like, he was horrible to her.
To put her in her place. And he'd say to people that visited the set, don't speak to her. Like, they didn't just, she didn't just play the part of a vulnerable woman. They transformed her into one.
Her hair was falling out from stress towards the end of the shoot.
That's amazing.
Which is one dark undertone to the film, which I always have in mind if I see clips. Just her performance, amazing as it is, you know, how much of that is, you know, it's a bit flippant, but how much of it is an act? She was really worked up.
Yeah. I mean, as you would say this about Wendy, like, did anyone else feel that she didn't actually really do anything apart from scream a lot? I mean, I know that sounds really flippant, but I think in the books her character was more kind of expanded upon, whereas in the film she's basically kind of more two-dimensional. I mean, sure, at the beginning she's loving and caring and loves her husband and son, but then she just turns into a scream machine, I think. And, you know, as we said, this may just be the actress being, you know, dead freaked out, but, like, I didn't feel they kind of handled her character as well as they could have, given the superb kind of directing and writing elsewhere in the movie.
I feel like it was a consequence of their relationship and how it had been leading up to their stay in the Overlook Hotel. I mean, I think it's clear straight away, just from the way he talks about them to other people and the way he actually is with them, that he is not fond of his family. And I think what begins to unravel is just what was always bubbling, and then in this isolated area where this guy himself may have a special gift for seeing things that aren't there, just drives him to the point of sort of unforgivable acts, really.
Yeah. Although you have to remember that he stopped drinking because he injured his family, so, like, I think he is a family man, or, you know, he was a family man. He just got kind of waylaid for a bit, came back, and then, thanks to the hotel, you know, reverted into this completely, you know, psychotic kind of monster.
Just this rage machine that's just ready to explode.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, you could see this as, like, an allegory for kind of alcoholism and kind of what it does to you. But it's just surprising nonetheless. Like, especially if you deny there are any supernatural elements in the film, and, you know, this is all in his own head, it makes it even all the more scarier, because you've got no one else to blame but him, and the fact that, you know, a human being can turn, you know, like that is actually quite creepy.
Yeah, maybe scarier than any actual horror film with a monster involved. But yeah, there we go. Happy Halloween.